Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
He's been in the locker room since 2018 and has seen the Chiefs make the AFC title game every year. Coincidence? Who knows? But no one is more plugged into your Chiefs than Nate Taylor of The Athletic.
I know the Chiefs are probably calling teams to be like, hey, sixth round pick, and I don't know if anybody's going to bite on that sort of trade offer.
And he joins CDOT every Friday at 4, right here on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan.
Welcome back into The Drive. We are expected to be joined by Nate Taylor here coming up in a bit. I'm very excited to get his thoughts on Joshua Uche, the newest member. Earlier in the week, we had Alex Barth on the show. He covers the Patriots for 98.5, the Sports Hub in Boston. And he believes that Uche would be a great addition to a contender like the Chiefs.
I think it's a great trade. One, because like you said, he's not going to be a focal point, right? Chris Jones, all those other guys up front, he's going to be able to come in, play situationally, and go try to win one-on-one. On top of that, so Uche was actually on an expiring contract last year, and it didn't seem like he'd be back. And a lot of people thought they'd move him last year, and the reports were that they could get an early day three pick for him at that time. They didn't end up moving him. He kind of falls off in the second half of the season. They bring him back this year on a one-year prove-it deal, and he's failed to live up to that. But you're talking about they went from potentially getting a fourth or fifth-round pick for him to a future sixth. So I think the Chiefs get a player that will help them, and they probably didn't pay as much as they would have for a similar player a year ago at the same time.
That was Alex Barth of 98.5, the Sports Hub in Boston. He believes that Uche would be a great addition to the Chiefs. Nate Taylor just walked in here. We'll introduce him here coming up in a bit. This is a trade that the Chiefs have made basically every year that Brett Veach has been here. We kind of know what his type is. Former first-round pick or second-round pick, a guy that they scouted, a guy that they like, that they can acquire for the cheap. And they got him. I can't think of a time that they acquired a player more cheaply than what they just got Joshua Uche for. He makes less than $1 million between now and the end of the season, and they gave up a sixth round pick in the 2026 NFL draft. So if he can give you anything, it would be a much needed bonus for the Kansas City Chiefs. Let's welcome in our guy Nate Taylor to get his thoughts on this deal. I think this is a really smart trade for the Chiefs. I would say this is a low-risk, possible, medium-reward kind of trade. I don't think he's the guy that got 11.5 sacks a couple seasons ago. You don't need him to be that. I think this is an example that maybe Mike Dana is a little bit more injured than they are letting off, or maybe Charles Omenihu isn't going to come back maybe as quickly as they thought. We got a chance to get a young, under-28-year-old pass rusher at next to nothing draft pick compensation or cap space wise, this is a no-brainer move for really any contending team in the league.
Correct. And it helps mitigate the two players you mentioned earlier, whether Mike Dana is not the same caliber of player because he has lingering injuries. He's had injuries with his calf and now with the pectoral. It's going to take Charles Omenihu to like mid-December to be probably back to his regular form that he showed last year. So that's okay. Joshua Uche can play right now. He can play situationally pretty well on third downs if you need just a regular four-man rush instead of having to have all these elaborate creative pressures from blitzes with Spagnuolo. So the thing that jumps out to me is he's probably their fastest pass rusher off the edge, which is an element that they lacked and that they need, because I think George Karlaftis does a really good job with spin moves and bull rushes and long arms and, you know, power to help collapse a pocket. You know, Chris Jones is going to be in the backfield quite a bit, but you need somebody to generate pressure quicker off the edge than Karlaftis or Dana or Felix Anadike Uzama. And again, if we all are led to believe that Joshua Uche can give you 20 good pass rushing snaps a game, hey, four or five of those should be speed off the edge that leads to chaos, right? Whether that's him getting a hit on the quarterback, generating pressure, or his pressure leading to somebody else cleaning up. If that's Tershawn Wharton, great. If it's Chris Jones, awesome. George Karlaftis can meet him at the quarterback if the timing is right. But he has a role. And if Spags wants to get even more creative and sort of slide him inside when Charles Omenihu comes back, I've also thought about that too. Like, the best version of the Chiefs pass rush is probably, as of right now, George Karlaftis rushing off of Chris Jones. And then you either have Tershawn Wharton or Joshua Oche rushing off of Charles Omenihu back to his normal form on the edge. So you have a five-man combination that you can play with four on a certain down.
I noticed the name was missing.
I'm sorry.
You didn't notice that name was missing?
I knew what I was saying.
Okay, I hear you. But yes. I'm saying is they spent the first round pick on somebody. And you were telling me somebody that hasn't been here a week is already ahead of them on your depth chart. That's noticeable to me.
Yes, yes. No, it's true. Guys, he's on a 4-year plan. And that's okay. It's okay. It's okay because you have Patrick Mahomes, Chris Jones, Travis Kelce, one of the best offensive coordinators in the history of the sport, and Steve Spagnuolo. It's okay. But like, I think it's reasonable for Chiefs fans to say you shouldn't expect anything from Felix Anadike Uzomah until midway through this point next year and in his fourth year. Now, if he plays well, you have the fifth-year option at your disposal. That's why you don't trade down. It's why Clark Hunt was like, I was gonna remind people this too. Like, the Chiefs were really considering trading down when the draft was in Kansas City. And then Clark was like, make the pick. Pick somebody. And we get the fifth-year option. So, okay, that's fine. But no.
Clark was not worried about the fifth-year option. He wasn't. Clark paid for those fireworks to go off after they made the pick.
I have the trophy in my hand. Yeah,
Clark paid for those fireworks, and we are not popping these fireworks for pick 42. No, we've got all these people out here. We are making this pick, so I'm not going to let you spin it like, oh, no.
Hey, fifth year option.
And you can do that when you're the boss.
True.
When you're very the one true. Paying everybody here, maybe you and Andy disagree. You're going to win that disagreement.
So, guys, they took a double developmental edge rusher in the first round and they won the Super Bowl last year. So look, I think Felix,
can we go back and can I ask you this question?
Yeah, sure.
Let's say that Felix Anudike Uzomah, let's say that he grew up in Seattle, Washington.
Ooh, don't do this to me.
Are they drafting him there? Or is Clark willing to trade back to get that player? Or was it just, it was the perfect sequence of everything? We can draft a hometown kid in our draft. I'm holding the trophy. The fireworks going off in the background. It could be a possibility. I'll shoot the Chiefs this. This is a pick that we don't need to immediately help us. True. So if you're saying that this is a 4-year plan, but not many teams are usually spending a first-round pick on a four-year developmental
defensive end. Yes, that's what he is. Yes, yes. I mean, by the time Chris Jones might be in the twilight of his prime is when you need Felix to be at his absolute peak, which might take 3 or 4 years under Joe Cullen. I know. I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen. I'm just telling you the truth. I think you are right, Carrington, that it was a fortuitous moment for all parties involved. Hey, we get to take the hometown kid. We have looked at him. We've obviously scouted him really hard. He's one of the youngest players in the draft at that time, too. So you knew what you were doing. This is about years 2, 3, and 4. This ain't about, hey, we need you to come in and be rookie defensive player of the year. Hell no. So we just need you to be an active body who can learn. And obviously, if you look at even Felix's college career, it wasn't like he came in and was immediately dominant in the Big 12. It took time. So you're hoping that that's a natural transition for him, that he will essentially become an ascending player in years 3, 4, and 5. Because of the Charles Omenihu suspension, hey, that helps. He'll get early playing experience. At the same time, it'd be nice if we took the hometown kid right now. Now, I don't know if we talked about this either. While Clark Hunt is holding the trophy, are we comfortable taking Rashee Rice with a first-round pick? The answer was no, but they definitely considered it at the time. So, okay, fine. Hopefully we get, you know, either Rashee Rice or another receiver similar in the second round, and that's what ended up happening. So they were comfortable with the idea of, hey, I think there was nobody in the organization that told me, oh, this guy's going to be just like George Karlaftis. No, they drafted George Karlaftis because we need a starting defensive end. And holy smokes, one fell to us at 30. I think it was pick 30. And so they sort of lucked out in that way. But yeah, I don't think you want to see Felix in a gotta have it third down in January. I just don't think that's the plan right now, because you would not be making a trade for Joshua Oche. You just wouldn't. And based on what you said earlier about not really giving up anything from a draft standpoint this year, it's a 6th-round pick next year. There's no real money at stake. Hey, if he does well, and I even wrote this in The Athletic, say Joshua Oche has like 6 sacks between now and the end of the season, makes a couple really nice plays in the postseason. Well, hey, you can bring him back for another 1-2 year deal. That'll be team friendly for you. And it'll be kind of like what Drew Tranquil did, where he was on a prove it 1 year deal. And obviously he fits the system. He's a really talented, smart player. Okay, you reward him. That's still not going to mess up Felix's timeline at all. So there's a case to be made that if this trade works out, it could benefit you even into next season, because you've proven to the player that he fits the system, that he helped the team win a Super Bowl or got back to the Super Bowl or whatever it may be. And he has, you know, 55% of the defensive snaps at his disposal if he wants to come back.
There's a lot of stuff I want to get your opinion on coming up on the other side. I want to get your opinion on D-Hop. I want to get your opinion on Xavier Worthy. And if you think they're done, we are just a handful of days away from the trade deadline. The trade deadline and the election end at the exact same time. So we are coming to the very end of this thing. Are the Chiefs going to make another move? Darius Slayton is still out there. We got Nate Taylor in studio. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison. On your new home for K-State Athletics, 96.5, The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
All right, I have probably 4 things written down to ask you, Nate Taylor. Let's start with this. I'm going to get myself in trouble here early. What do you think is the highest number between now and the end of the regular season? Do you think it's Joshua Oche sacks or Travis Kelce touchdowns?
Travis Kelce touchdowns.
Okay.
We're really hedging it, but I'm going to say like 5-4 or something like that.
You got Kelce getting hot the second half of the season.
Yeah, I do, just because, I mean, I think DeAndre Hopkins will help him. I mean, we saw it a little bit against the Raiders. And so, you know, I was looking at some stats earlier today. For Monday night's game, excuse me. Buccaneers don't really guard tight ends well. So, you know, the Buccaneers rank 30th in receiving yards allowed to the tight end position. So, hey, who knows? Maybe he gets one on Monday Night Football. But I will trust the future Hall of Famer over the guy coming over in a trade.
I feel like D-Hop could have played more, and I felt like them not using them was maybe a little bit just more symbolic than anything. And just given his age of just, we're going to take this thing a lot slower. He only ran a route 14 times on Sunday. They only targeted him 3 times. Mm-hmm. He was on the field for 32% of the snaps. We're not questioning conditioning. And with the guy who is an established veteran, I don't know if you're worried as much about the miscommunication. To me, it felt more of a, let's try to establish Xavier Worthy. Let's continue to use some of our other options. And we can bring this thing along slowly up until we get to the Bills. I actually think that that's kind of going to be their position with Hopkins for the next 2 weeks. And then I think we'll see. All right, this was the plan with DeAndre Hopkins here coming up in after 3 games, and the 4th game is against the Buffalo Bills.
I genuinely love that, because you know, give him a nice little, you know, ovation, couple moments against the Buccaneers. Denver's a good defense. Now, I don't know if they can hang with the Chiefs for 60 minutes based on, you know, some of their highs and low moments from an offensive standpoint. But yeah, if we believe the Chiefs will handle business over the next 2 weeks, then yeah, the fireworks are supposed to be on November 17th on the road. And look, by then too, we would think, since he's not on IR, that Juju Smith-Schuster will be back for that game as well. So you will have perhaps Isaiah Pacheco, Juju, and then obviously the usual, you know, crew so far, Kareem Hunt, Travis Kelce, you know, Xavier Worthy and everybody else. So I actually love that idea just because you want as many options for Patrick Mahomes during the stretch run, which really starts on November 17th, because then you have important games against Los Angeles, Houston, and then obviously Christmas Day is its own sort of weirdness. But hey, as of right now, the Steelers are the number two seed, which is insane. So, you know, that's the stretch run, but I love that idea because it gives, at that point, if this is true and your plan is what the Chiefs execute, Carrington, that gives DeAndre close to a month to where you can really, you know, anticipate what he's good at. He will understand, he'll have more timing with Mahomes, and then you can work off some of the things you've already put on tape to sort of switch up the tendencies to get him the ball maybe on third down more or in the red zone, because you know the Buffalo Bills are going to be looking at Travis Kelce. They're going to be looking at maybe Juju or Xavier Worthy based on down and distance. So, yeah, I love that idea. And that's one of the reasons why you got him, right? So that you can keep your lead against Buffalo and not have Buffalo sort of chase you down in the second half of the year.
Do you think that Isaiah Pacheco plays in the Bills game?
I know he wants to. I know Pacheco wants to play next Sunday. I don't know if that's going to happen, you know, but
I guess to ask, is that because of him or is that because of them? Like physically, physically, could Pacheco come back and play?
Andy yesterday, I'm sure you may have talked about it, but Andy, we as a group of reporters asked Andy about Isaiah, and he was like, oh yeah, that's right. He's doing great, but he's not gonna play. So, I saw Isaiah today in the locker room. Looking pretty good. Obviously, we saw the clips of him running. If he plays against the Buffalo Bills on November 17th, I do want to remind people that, like, it's not like he's going to come in and get, like, all the snaps. They will obviously ease him in. That's what Andy Reid mostly does in these circumstances.
They didn't ease in Kareem Hunt.
Well, they were in desperate times because they were like, hey, rookie, can you just give us one good game? And to his credit, Carson Steele played about as well as you could have asked him for against the Atlanta Falcons. They barely win that game. And then Carson Steele fumbled, and that was it. That was just like, hey, Kareem, get ready because you're taking all the carries from this day forth. So that was interesting timing, too. It's like they kind of pushed the rookie as much as they could. And then once Kareem got into a flow, they were like, why would we stop? Because we have no other options. And it leaves Samaje Perine back in his, you know, usual Jerick McKinnon third down back role. But yes, he could potentially practice next week ahead of facing the Denver Broncos on November 10th. Most cases, Andy Reid wants to give you a week of practice, then give you another week to get you, you know, back into, you know, the best shape, conditioning, acclimate yourself to your teammates in terms of the timing on certain plays. And then, yeah, you might get a sprinkle or two of Isaiah Pacheco against the Buffalo Bills.
Is there any debate on who their number one running back is?
When he comes back?
Yes.
No.
I just bring that up because for some reason, I don't know how Rob and I are usually on different pages when it comes to running backs. We were on the same page here. It is obvious who their best running back is. Textlon is actually very split on who the best running back is for the Chiefs. Yes, I know the Textlon. It's very, very shocking. I would say it is probably 60-40 Pacheco, but there is definitely a Kareem Hunt hive that is growing amongst Chiefs fans.
Oh, okay.
Which is very odd for a guy who is averaging 3.7 yards per carry, but yes.
But the best thing about, I think, and you might even benefit from this more when Pacheco does come back, and let's say he takes over the majority, like let's say it's a 65-35 split between carries, right? Well, now you have an even stronger option in short yardage and red zone and goal line situations with Kareem Hunt, whereas Pacheco could do everything in the middle of the field. He can be a much more reliable player to pop on first down when you want to sort of run between the tackles. He's a better option on stretches, pitches, tosses, maybe even counters to some degree. You know, if his speed is normal to what we've been accustomed to coming off the fractured fibula, I mean, I know one of the things that people in the organization loved about Kareem was that, hey, when they did this workout, it was like, okay, he looks to be in good shape. And then you get into the practice and you're like, oh my God, his hands. That's right. We forgot he could catch so well out of the backfield and then give you yards after the catch. They haven't used him a ton in the screen game, but that's always a possible avenue. I think Kareem, you could say right now, is a better receiving running back than Isaiah Pacheco. But I think in terms of where the offense was wanting to go when the season began, it still should be Pacheco's main job to have Kareem sort of come in and be a really good second option. Like, I'm not going to, like, say that Chiefs fans are maybe in love with the reunion of Kareem Hunt, but he does score touchdowns in the red zone, and that's what you ask him to do. But I do think people forget how good Pacheco was in the postseason last year.
I just always think, and I make this point a lot about Brock Purdy. When you are a late round pick, I think people are just always kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop. Mm. That, you know, Kareem Hunt got here, and I would say Kareem Hunt has been better than I expected.
For now, sure.
In some ways, it has been kind of what I expected. I mean, so I looked this up. We were curious. He has 30, or Pacheco had 34 carries, and Kareem Hunt has 84 carries. They have the same number of carries that have gone more than 10 yards this season.
Oof.
You do not have any explosiveness with Kareem Hunt in your offense. Now, he is very reliable, very dependable, great in pass blocking. There are a lot of positive things.
Yes.
I think the best thing for Kareem Hunt whenever Isaiah Pacheco comes back is the carries that they were thinking about giving to Clyde Edwards-Helaire, they are no longer giving those to Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Now you know who your number two running back is.
Yep.
You know who your number three running back is, and you also know who your Jerick McKinnon is. So their their running back room is far stronger than you thought it was going to be.
Yep.
But it is just very obvious who is the much more explosive back. And this offense, they still need explosiveness. There's not a lot of explosiveness in the pass game. And right now, just because of the kind of runner that Kareem is, they don't have a lot of explosiveness in the run game as well.
Yeah. I mean, last year, guys, he had a 48-yard touchdown against the Jets, which, again, pretty decent defense. Not great, but decent. I just want to remind people that in the postseason, Isaiah Pacheco had 89 yards in the most frigid conditions you could have against the Miami Dolphins. Now, you could say, Nate, Miami wasn't good. They were banged up. Sure, but they made the postseason. Well, the next week against the Buffalo Bills, he had 97 yards on 15 carries. Along a 29, a touchdown. I mean, he had a touchdown in each of the three postseason games that you had to win to make it to the Super Bowl. Now, he struggled in the Super Bowl, which was a little bit odd just because he had shown
offense just kind of struggled.
Well,
in the Super Bowl.
I mean, Pat had to go, you know, to another level. You know, but against Baltimore, the best defense in the league last year, he had a touchdown and 68 really tough grinded out yards when they knew you were running the ball, because the Chiefs they never trailed in that game. So those 68 yards are in some ways just as impressive as the 89 he had against the Miami Dolphins. I know we live in a world where, like, we're just thinking about this season, but guys, like, their offense last year was Travis Kelce, Rashee Rice, and Isaiah Pacheco, and that's it. And they won the Super Bowl. So, I mean, Pacheco was doing fine, obviously, in training camp. It's unfortunate that he got hurt. He had 90 yards against the Cincinnati Bengals. Again, mostly when the Bengals knew they were running the ball because of the way the game script was going and Mahomes was struggling, throwing the – that's one of the few games where actually Mahomes, I think, struggled throughout much of the game was against the Bengals, which you can credit, I guess, to Lou Anarumo. But, guys, he had a 4.7 yards per carry against the Bengals before he got hurt. The crazy thing about Kareem Hunt was he did give you a very vintage game against the New Orleans Saints on Monday Night Football, and he's been fine. He was really good in the red zone against the 49ers, and then he was fine against the Raiders. Nothing great, but obviously productive enough to where you could have true balance. But also, Carrington, when the Raiders knew you were running the ball because you had the lead throughout much of the game, he averaged 2.8 yards a carry. It's not great, and he's also not young from a running back standpoint. So again, the younger, more talented, better option, more times than not, is Isaiah Pacheco if he comes back from the injury and returns to form the way he should based on how well he was playing in the offense during the postseason and the first two games of the season.
Right now, we're joined in studio by Nate Taylor. We'll do a little random question at the end of the hour. This is a little bit different week because the Chiefs don't play on Sunday. They play on Monday. So we'll kind of open it up to questions here coming up in just a bit. Let me ask you about the trade deadline, as the trade deadline is right around the corner. We have seen the Chiefs make two moves, two different kind of moves. You go pick up D-Hop. You go pick up Oche as a rotational piece.
Yep.
Are they done? Would you be surprised that you get a notification here coming up in 2 days that they have made a move to go get Darius Slayton? I think the left tackle conversation is probably over.
Yeah, that's, come on, guys.
I mean, if they were going to get a left tackle, the answer was Cam Robinson.
Right.
That was the answer, was to go get Cam Robinson.
And they were kind of in on that, but
I mean, once I saw that his cap hit was $10 million, that was a very, very short conversation that the Chiefs were a part of.
Hey, y'all going to eat any of that money?
No. Yeah, that was it. Thank you. Thank you. Let's go on about our day. Yeah. You know, we can't go get this guy that costs $800,000. Let's go get him on the other side of the ball. Let's go pick him up.
Exactly.
Are they going to be players over the next 3-4 days?
They might. I know that the text line, this was interesting because I haven't watched him this season because why would I? But I know the text line is pretty hot right now on Kendall Fuller. Love him as a human being. Still playing pretty well based on what Pro Football Focus says. You know, for a Dolphins team where their season is essentially over. Now, from a contract standpoint, not great because he has a pretty decent cap hit in 2025, where his base salary is almost $6.5 million. I mean, I think the more logical way they could be a player is at cornerback. So I understand why Kendall Fuller's name comes up. He's also played in the system before. You know, he can be both productive as a nickel cornerback or as like a third safety.
The Chiefs always like calling up that old thing too. They love it. There's nothing they love than going back to somebody they dated 3-4 years ago. They love just showing up at Thanksgiving like, bro, I remember you was with her. Yeah, man, we kind of worked things out. They love bringing that thing back.
So I mean, I mean, again, I don't know what Miami would necessarily do. They actually get pretty good cap. One of the reasons I guess you would trade them is Miami gets pretty good cap relief if they do trade him, which is fascinating, but it doesn't help the Chiefs. So cornerback seems the most likely. I mean, even Andy Reid said today, like, hey guys, or this was yesterday. Hey guys, it's Wanya Morris until otherwise. And we'll just,
his cap hit's not that bad. I'm looking a little bit more here.
We'll just live with the results.
Kendall Fuller, his contract's not that bad if that's what they want to do. Now, they would have to do something for next season if they wanted to bring him back.
Yeah.
I mean, his cap hit the rest of the way is probably a little bit more than $1 million. His cap hit next year is $8.3 million. I'm telling you that the Chiefs are not paying Kendall Fuller a base salary of $6.4 million next year to play corner for the Chiefs. So, I mean, if Miami's willing to eat some of that future money, they could. The Chiefs, I could see the Chiefs being in on Kendall Fuller. That's the only way I could see them doing anything towards that, though.
Yeah, and you have to remember, too, because they're conditional, because of the trade with Tennessee, right now it's a fifth-round pick that can go to a fourth-round pick. So those two picks are sort of tied together. I guess you could use this year's six. I got to double-check this. Or you could say, hey, we'll give, you know, we'll do a pick swap. We'll give you a sixth for a seventh or whatever. But it's going to be a small,
basically what the Ravens trade did for Deontay Johnson.
Yes. Well, that's fascinating because Deontay Johnson apparently wants to be a Baltimore Raven, or he feels like he can maximize his value most in Baltimore instead of maybe playing somewhere else.
What wide receiver has ever thought I could increase my value of playing in the Ravens offense? Has something changed?
I'm just telling you what happened.
Can you give me an example? Can you give me an example of the last 15 years of a wide receiver that increased their value by going to play for the Baltimore Ravens? That doesn't even make sense to me.
Hey. I heard this week, I haven't double checked it, but I heard this week that Lamar Jackson's on pace to be a 4,000 yard quarterback this year.
Thank you to the 20. Well, welcome to the 21st century. He's going to pass for 4,000 yards. That's average now. 12 quarterbacks in the league are going to throw for 4,000 yards this year. We're celebrating Lamar doing that now.
And what this really tells you too is that Carolina is so bad at this. You had perhaps the best trade piece when all this started, right? When Davante Adams basically told everybody, "I'm out, guys." You should have traded him that day, because the market was at its highest point, and maybe you could have gotten a third-round pick for Deontay Johnson. Instead, you waited too long and you let three guys go off the board, and then you're like, I mean, we got to sit him somewhere. All right, well, let's sit him to Baltimore.
And that's why I was shocked there was more teams not in on it, because if you
the question then became is, once the Chiefs made their decision with DeAndre Hopkins, they're done at the receiving standpoint, especially if you know Hollywood Brown might come back.
Yeah, because then all the other teams, I think, would really need a wide receiver are in their division. Like New Orleans could use a wide receiver. Also, Tampa Bay could use a receiver. I don't think Carolina's trading him to Tampa Bay.
Yes, and to Baltimore's credit, as much as I try to see it from their side of things, hey, man, you're not going to win in the postseason with Isaiah Likely and Mark Andrews. You're just not. So there's a reason you lost to the Cleveland Browns. Lamar Jackson needs help, okay? Or he's got to go into, like, Superman mode and use his legs even more when we just realized this week, hey, Doc, can I get another day off of practice? Like, you're taking two rest days in early November?
Got a long way to go.
That's not a good sign.
Yeah, we got a long way to go.
So stop running for a couple weeks, Lamar. But also, we don't have any other receiver than Zay Flowers, so we do need a legitimate second option. So I understand from both Deontay Johnson's standpoint, hey, this is best solution I can go to. I need to get the hell out of Carolina. Because I kind of held him hostage for like a couple weeks on the trade market. So I know Lamar's a good quarterback. I know he's going to have to pass the ball. I'm going to be playing in bigger games. I'm going to be in the postseason most likely. And hey, if I have a great postseason, this is the best way for me to maximize my value when I was finally allowed to be traded somewhere. What's funny about this too is that I think Deontay Johnson squashed his own trade value because, hey man, I ain't playing this week. Like, I'm just, nope. And they're like, well, are you going to practice? Hell no. And they're like, oh, damn, well, if. So Baltimore.
I mean, they basically just gave him to the Ravens, yes, honestly. They really,
I mean, Baltimore called and waited at the right time. It also helped that Baltimore just lost to Cleveland of all teams. And so, yeah, it ended up working out well for Baltimore because they were patient and they still got a pretty good player who was very disgruntled and was never going to play another snap for the Carolina Panthers. So in the arms race that we are in the AFC, hey, Amari Cooper, we'll see. DeAndre Hopkins, as long as he stays healthy, he's going to be great for the Chiefs. And Deontay Johnson at least gives Lamar more explosiveness and another option, because what the Browns showed on Sunday was, hey, if we just contain Lamar and we double Zay Flowers, no one else can beat us other than please tackle Derrick Henry. So if you load the box and you double Zay, where is he going other than to try to create and make something happen? And then, of course, when receivers were open, Lamar missed them last week, which is also not great. But again, hey, if he needs a rest week, I guess he needs a rest week. But yeah, I think the Chiefs ultimately made a decision. Carolina didn't want to be a part of it, and they got the most experienced player who's ready to help a team over the top. Whereas the Deontay Johnson angle was, hey, if we can get him into our system, let him see what it's like, maybe we can convince him to stay, you know, while he's still in the prime of his career. That will be now Baltimore's task to do over the next 11 weeks.
I want you guys to text in some questions for Nate here, 913-586-7965. This is a little bit of a different week. This is usually when we'll preview the game, but I'm not really that interested in previewing a game on Friday that doesn't happen until Monday. It's a little bit different when it's on Sunday. So you guys send some questions in. I've got some more to ask him. I do want to kind of go rapid fire and give you guys an opportunity to get your questions. Someone has a question about Adam Thielen. There's also a couple other options of guys that could potentially be out there. We'll get your thoughts here. We're going to go rapid fire questions with Nate Taylor of The Athletic. Keep it right here. It's The Drive on 96.5 The Fan.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
This man was a bona fide scrub.
On 96.5 The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Nate Taylor here. We're going to go rapid fire through some questions. We're going to get things going. My first question to you, Nate Taylor, is we have Lions and Packers on Sunday.
Yes.
You get to watch these games.
Yes.
You usually got to work.
I know.
How dare the Chiefs just inconvenience your schedule like that? They don't consult with you
at all.
You know what? I like their schedule now. They play a lot of 325 games and games on Monday. You know what that means? 12 o'clock red zone, baby.
Let's go.
I love it. It's great. So this week, I'm excited because I can give my full focus to Lions and Packers because I think that's the best game of the week. Who do you have winning that one?
Let me go Packers. It's in Lambeau. Jordan Love has been okay. Not great, but okay. If the Packers win, it makes the division really, really – it makes it a lot of fun. Now, if the Lions win, because they've been blowing everybody out lately, then that kind of, you know, just reaffirms that they are the top team, at least right now in the NFC. Now, some people could say, well, what about, you know, Philly? I understand Philly's 5-2 as well. But, yeah, I hope the Packers win just because then it makes the rest of the season a real race, not only for the division – but, man, you might go into a case where, like, whoever wins the next game, the rematch, can be the one seed and win the division. Or you could be, like, playing on Super Wild Card Weekend, probably that Monday night game, where you're like, man, we won 12, 11 games and we ain't got no home playoff game. They're like, nah, you got to go to Atlanta to play the Falcons or whatever. So I'm going to pick the Packers just to make it fun. And if the Packers don't beat them, then yeah, the Lions are that team.
Text line 913-586-7965. We're going to go through rapid-fire questions to ask Nate here between now and the end of the hour. Are you a believer in the Denver Broncos?
No. Stop it. Stop it.
See, this is the thing.
I can't do this.
Early in the week, I was getting killed for the Broncos' opinion is. I'm not telling you that I think the Broncos are good, but seven teams have to make the postseason, and right now there's eight teams that are over 500. You gotta like seven teams in the AFC. You gotta like seven teams.
Hey, Denver, it's been a hell of a ride. Your wins, their most impressive win, honestly, is against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They've beaten the Jets.
You might think I'm crazy. I think they get the Chiefs one of the two games.
Maybe on January 5th because the Chiefs don't need it. Because they will have already wrapped up the one or two seed. I think reality is going to come really fast.
Probably so.
I think reality is going to come because I do expect them to lose at Baltimore. I do expect them to lose next week to the Chiefs. I do expect them to lose the following week to the Atlanta Falcons. Now, their stretch will be right after that.
They get one of those teams you just mentioned.
Okay.
They get one of them.
Sure.
They get one of them.
Okay.
The NFL's just, you know how the NFL is. And every year, team might be Pittsburgh this year, right? It might be Pittsburgh. But you and I both know every year there's a team that you look up and they're 9-8 or right. They're 10-7.
You're sitting like, how?
That's the Broncos this year. That team you just described is the Broncos. Hey. They win 9 or 10 games and none of us can explain it. And next year, kind of like the Giants, 2 years ago.
Yeah, that is true.
And then next year, everybody picks against the Broncos to miss the playoffs next year. You've seen this story before.
Okay, here's how the Broncos can get to four more wins, which will give them 9 because they're 5-3 right now. They have a 4-game stretch against the Raiders, Browns, Colts, Chargers, Bengals. Win 4 out of those 5 games, and you might be in the playoffs. God, what? It must be nice to have a third place, fourth place schedule.
Text line 913-586-7965. Nate, who is the bigger disappointment? Is it the Jets or the Cowboys? Are either of those teams possible to turn things around?
No. The Jets are a more disappointing team just because I think Aaron Rodgers got older than we all realized. And I've been saying this for a while. Last night was a little different, but like their defense has been just as inconsistent as their offense. There's no way you should let Russell Wilson coming off the bench beat you the way he did the week before. So I think the Jets are a bigger disappointment because I felt like they could actually have competed in their division. Look at the Cowboys roster, guys. It's bad. They have like 4 to 5 really good players, and then the rest is just a lot of fluff. Carrington. I don't like. By the way, they didn't get anybody in free agency either. Ugh, this is. Yeah, the
and they
the
also
Cowboys
lost their,
disappoint me.
And they also lost their second best offensive player in Tony Pollard.
Yes, Yes, easily.
I was talking about this earlier this week. Somehow we treat rushing yards like they count for half of what passing and receiving yards are. It's very weird to me. Like, Tony Pollard was a very important offensive player for them that gave them great balance. And I think we all knew what the Cowboys' problem was going to be, that they were going to be incredibly one-dimensional. That's exactly what they've been.
Yes.
They can't run the football. They can't control the line of scrimmage. You're going to lose a lot in the National Football League if that's the case. Where are you at on C.J. Stroud? Rob thinks that the jig could possibly be up on C.J. Stroud. I think it's way more on the offensive line. That's not a team that can block or protect its quarterback. Someone on the text line says, is C.J. Stroud the most overrated quarterback in the league? I want to get your thoughts on C.J. Stroud.
No, he's not the most overrated quarterback in the league. He's very good. He's good, guys. It's okay. Every now and then you just have a bad game. It happens. Like, I mean, he was not good last night. But I also know too that their division is so bad that he's gonna help them win the division, and then they might win a playoff game, and then hey, we'll see what happens in the divisional round. But no, I don't think he's the most overrated quarterback. That's asinine.
If you had a vote for MVP at the midway point,
yep,
who would you vote for?
Josh Allen.
Rob would vote for Jared Goff.
Why you do this to me?
That's what he said.
Jared Goff be a good MVP.
I mean, you know,
I think Josh Allen's a
better player.
I think Josh Allen's a better player, but it's based on individual season, and Jared Goff so far having a better individual season. Isn't that how the award works?
True. Now, again, to our point earlier, if they beat the Green Bay Packers in Green Bay, okay, I'll back off. But right now, I would give it to Josh Allen because the highlights are intoxicating. I'm sorry. He's really good. Also, they went up to Seattle and just curb stomped him. It was crazy watching him last week. So I would say Josh Allen, but Jared Goff's very good. I can't criticize it. It's fine.
Yeah, I don't hate the – I'm on your side. I vote for Josh Allen as well. I don't hate the Jared Goff.
No.
I mean, if that team ends up being the one seed in the NFC – he's got a strong case, and if you look at the Lions' schedule down the stretch, there's a lot of games in which Jared Goff can change your opinion on whether or not you think you should play. I mean, this week they got the Lions game. They play Sunday Night Football next week against the Texans. Mm. They got the game on Thanksgiving. It's going to be one of the five most watched games of the regular season. There's a lot of spots for Jared Goff to enter the MVP conversation. I don't think he's at the forefront of it now, but he could be in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. And I mean, he went to the Josh Allen point too. Like, they have played a common opponent against the Seahawks. My man went 18 for 18 and two touchdowns. It's nuts, man. So no, Jared Goff is playing out of his mind, and he's been one of the best stories of the last two seasons, really. Just the fact that he was kind of a tossle. He was just thrown into the trade, and now he's, you know, leading them to the NFC Championship game. And again, you could argue right now they're the best team in the NFC because he is playing so well and that roster is so balanced with a coach that's gotten better over time too, and Coach Campbell. So I get it. Man, they put 52 points on the Titans.
Easy too. It was an easy 52. Before I get you out of here, Nate Taylor, when does Christmas start? When in the Taylor household does Christmas start? Because we learned earlier today in the Britton household, today is the start of Christmas season. When does Christmas season start?
Is that because of the misses, Mr.
Tomorrow at 2:00 when Ohio State, Penn State's over, tree's going up.
The tree?
Tree's going up.
Is it a fake tree?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I was like, what?
Oh, he's about to have his own a pine tree for the next 55 days.
That's okay, crazy. Hold on. I was about to be like, wow. Okay, yes, ma'am. Okay, we understand. In my household, Rob, I'm in the same predicament. Okay.
Christmas starts this weekend?
Christmas lights are going up tonight.
He was there trying to go. No, I saw what you did there. You really tried to kind of shame
Rob.
Yes,
of course.
And then on the back end, y'all just
the outside lights. Are you could like you
yes,
here
outside Christmas dog. He hung up like our man hung him up like 3 weeks ago.
Oh my goodness!
Because Holly was like. By the way, we're taking Hayden back. We're walking back home from trick or treating last night. He's in his little Harry Potter costume. Man, got all the candy in the world. And she was talking to some of the other parents in the neighborhood.
Oh, yeah, they going up tomorrow. I said, come on.
All right. Have you voted yet? Because you can't have your tree up before you vote. What's going on?
Yes,
now?
I voted early. It was very smooth. Again, I would encourage everybody to do it. What you don't want to be doing is waking up on Tuesday morning being like, I gotta fight the Lord today to get in this line.
I went ahead and knocked that out today. Yeah. I wasn't dealing with it in a couple of days.
No, I mean, hey, if you vote early, you did yourself a favor because I remember I was in the line in 2016 and I was just like, it's not worth it. I mean, it is worth it, but golly. So I've gotten a lot better about early voting and expanding it, which I appreciate. But yeah, man, I voted what, last week? And yeah, this woman told me the Christmas lights are going up tonight. I told her, like, you really are Mariah Carey now. Like, as soon as Halloween's over, it's just
Christmas time.
All I want for Christmas is you. And it's just like, come on.
That is our guy, Nate Taylor, joining us in studio. Keep her right here. It's The Drive.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.